Good morning. We'll call a meeting to order of the joint committees of agriculture policy and finance. And it looks as though we have enough members for a quorum. We don't take any official action at these joint meetings, but we do like to see a quorum here. So thanks, members, for getting over here and getting started on time. This morning, we have the department in with us to do some overviews of their work this past biennium, this past year. We'll get right to that. If you have questions as the commissioner is going along, let us know, and we'll stop and get those questions answered right away. If not, you can wait till they finish their presentations. So with that, the department overview with Commissioner Fredrickson. Come on down and welcome to this joint committee of Ag Policy and also Ag Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chairs. Good to be here again. Greetings, old members and new members alike. Old members like Hansen and a few others around, emphasis on old, Deb. Good to see all of you. Good to be here in front of the committee again. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is walk through a PowerPoint with you. Just to give you a overview of the department, I believe that's what you were requesting for both new members of the committee, new members of the legislature, and certainly for as a reminder of the work that we do at the Department of Agriculture. Again, it's a great privilege to be able to come over and spend time with you. Before we go on, if with the indulgences of the chair, I would like to introduce to you Leif Arsvold. Leif is shadowing. He is a FFA member. He's shadowing me today. He comes from a renowned FFA family, the Arsvolds, and so he's the next generation to pick up the mantle and move forward. So good to have you along with us today, and hopefully you'll learn something from this process, Leif. Also, we have pretty much the whole department over here today, Mr. Chair, the heads of the divisions within the department, and so if I fold up at any time, they'll be able to step in and pick it up. You never know at my age, you know.
Very good.
All right.
Carry on, Commissioner.
Let's move then to the first item on the PowerPoint, the economic cornerstone of Minnesota, at least one of the economic cornerstone, and that is agriculture. Agriculture generates in excess of $90 billion of economic activity on an annual basis. It supports somewhere in the area of 340,000 jobs across the state. As of 2015, we had 73,600 farms. And just by way of a comparison and a picture of what's transpired over the last 150 years, I was looking at a little brochure in an antique store one day, and it was the state of Minnesota. And they were advertising the statistics of the state of Minnesota in the year 1958. 1958 was the year that Minnesota celebrated its centennial or 100th anniversary. The number of farms in Minnesota in 1958 was 185,000. So we have literally dropped over 100,000 farmers since 1958, the year we celebrated 100th anniversary. I was absolutely struck by that number. But we move forward. We are first in the nation in the production of turkeys. Even with our hard hit over the last couple of years, we are still maintaining our first place across the nation, also in the area of sugar beets and in the area of processed sweet corn. We're second in hogs, and we're second in wild rice. We have a $10 billion annual crop sector existing in Minnesota, and we have an $8.8 billion livestock sector. So we're talking about some serious numbers as we move ahead. Current economic trends. I don't need to tell you, as you go home every weekend and talk to those of you that represent rural districts, talk to your farmers and your business folks, that net farm income is forecast to decline for the third straight year. USDA projects that the 2016 net farm income would be the lowest since 2009. Prices, obviously, are the main factor for this decline. Total cash receipts are forecast to fall by 7% in 2016 over 2015. We're led by a 10% drop in livestock receipts and a 4% drop in crop receipts. All major animal products, including dairy, beef, pork, poultry, and eggs, are forecast to decrease in cash receipts, as are feed crops. Now, farmers survived the 80s. I'm sure we're going to survive this downturn in the economy. But nonetheless, it's a little disappointing to be able to see those prices, and especially when you came off of a couple of really strong years from a price perspective. Right now, I think that, you know, thanks to seed technology and good management, we're making much of that downturn up just in terms of volume alone. Production costs are also forecast to be down. This is a little bit of good news. For the second year in a row, by 3% over 2015, led by declines in input costs of feed, seed, and fuel. Next. At the Department of Agriculture, when I came in 6 years ago, I inherited a mission statement that has stood the test of time, and it certainly stands the test of time while I've been at the department. I like the mission, and let me just state it for you. Our mission is to enhance Minnesotans' quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our ag economy. Those three pillars are the pillars on which the Department of Ag has stood, and we continue to stand with a long, long history. Minnesota, we have two main areas of responsibility, Mr. Chairman and members. We are the primary state agency responsible for protecting the state's food supply, and we are a key player in protecting the state's natural resources. We are also the primary agency responsible for supporting and promoting the state's ag industry and the state's ag economy. The department specifically, we have 450 full-time equivalent employees that provide many of the services that impact Minnesota residents every day. We promote Minnesota farm products in local, state, national, and international markets. We respond to diseases and pests that threaten agriculture and natural resources. We inspect all grocery stores and convenience stores, as well as all dairy farms and processing plants in the state. Let me just give you a real simple definition. Health inspects everything that's served on a plate. So if you go to a restaurant, that's health. The Department of Agriculture inspects things that are not served on a plate, with exception of, for example, a grocery store. We inspect grocery stores. However, if the grocery store has a deli, and that deli's receipts are more than 50% of the total receipts, that becomes the Department of Health. They inspect both. If the deli's receipts are less than 50%, then we inspect both the deli and the grocery store. But rule of thumb, generally speaking, what's on a plate, health, what's not on a plate, that becomes our responsibility. We regulate feed mills and we regulate fertilizer plants. Let's go to the pie chart in terms of where the money comes from and where we spend it. $49 million comes, and this would be looking ahead for 2017, $49 million comes from general tax revenues or general fund. In other words, 42% of our total annual budget. 8% $8 million constitutionally dedicated revenue, and that comes that supports our clean water activities, or 7% of the overall budget. 15% of the dollars are federal program funding, $17 million exactly, and $42 million are fees paid by customers, or 36%. Again, 42% general, 7% clean water, 15% federal resources, 36% dedicated ag fund and special revenue funds. Our annual budget amounts to about $116 million. Of course, biennially, you can come close to doubling that. At the Department of Agriculture, we carry out our responsibilities through six main program areas, and they are as follows: food and feed safety, dairy and meat inspection, pesticide and fertilizer management, plant protection, agriculture marketing and development, and laboratory services. Let me talk just a little bit about our feed and food and feed safety division. We license and inspect retail food businesses and food manufacturing facilities. We respond to foodborne illness outbreak. And we do this very quietly. Much of the work that's done on a day-to-day basis, you don't even know about. We inspect, we educate, we try to correct a problem. My approach is educate rather than fine people. And we try very hard to make sure that we follow that. We're here to help you correct the situation that could cause you problems in the future or that's causing you problems right now. I will say that pictures don't lie, and I've seen some horrendous situations across the state in grocery stores and in other food processing facilities, but we're there to make sure that that doesn't continue and that we change that, and you won't even know about it when it happens. So we're pleased about the behind-the-scenes work that we do to continue to educate those people that are working in food retail business. We issue consumer advisory. We'll work with USDA and FDA on product recalls. We don't have statutory authority to recall a product. That's a voluntary approach that businesses will have to take to do that, and they're very good at it. We inform them of a problem, and they will move, if they have to a recall situation. We will send out a consumer advisory. That then makes it public, so you will see that in the newspaper if we actually move ahead with an advisory to make sure that people are well aware that there could be a problem with a piece or with a product that they may purchase. We also license and inspect commercial feed manufacturing facilities. We enforce commercial pet food rules. We promote education and awareness of food safety rules, regulations, and practices. And again, that is an area that I'm extremely proud of the division, that they work hard to make sure that education is number one. Dairy and Meat Inspection Division, we inspect all dairy farms and dairy processing plants. There are about 3,600 dairy farms in Minnesota. I think I'm correct. I'm close. 3,600?
There was over 6,000 when I started.
Yeah, well, that's the last century.
I think you're close. Yeah.
You missed, Representative Erdahl, my comment earlier, and that is that in 1958 we had 185 farms. That was the year we celebrated. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know about centennial celebration. The year of the centennial, the 100th centennial, we had 185,000 farms, so things have tended to trend down. Today we have 73,400. So 100,000 plus farms gone. Farmers, I guess, farm families. We try to get to those dairy farms at least once a year. We do it on a risk basis, particularly in the processing facilities. If those facilities have a history, we'll try to get back to them more than that. But we know our inspectors are on the job. They know where there may be some problems, and they will be there to address those problems. We inspect meat and poultry processing facilities. We register meat processors for the venison donation program and recommend to those people that are inclined to donate venison where to go to have that processed, and then we will inspect that processed product to make sure that no lead remains in that meat, and that meat then is donated to various groups across Minnesota. Our pesticide and fertilizer management division, which is the largest of the divisions, we have in excess of 200 full-time equivalents working in that division. They regulate the sale, the use, and the disposal of pesticides, fertilizers, and other ag chemicals. In partnership with the Environmental Protection Agency, we approve new pesticide products for use in Minnesota. We are the lead state agency in responding to and cleaning up pesticide and fertilizer spills in Minnesota. We monitor groundwater and surface water in sensitive areas to determine whether pesticides may be impacting water quality. And we're certainly doing that in the Karst region, and we're also doing it in the Central Sands region of Minnesota. We administer the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. And we also develop and implement the state's nitrogen fertilizer management plan. Our plant protection division, we inspect nurseries and greenhouses to ensure plants are free from diseases and pests. We enforce the state seed law. We inspect and certify the seed industry and the seed potato industry. We monitor for crop pests. We work to control and prevent invasive species. By that, examples would be emerald ash borer, gypsy moth, and, of course, Palmer amaranth. A little story about Palmer amaranth before we get into the serious business of discussing that. I had established a meeting with USDA FSA to talk about that very issue. I think I mentioned this to you. So talk about the issue of Palmer amaranth. And this is a lesson for us all that sometimes our language, the language we use in agriculture, can be totally misinterpreted by folks. The FSA state director had hired a new person to be at the phone. I had made contact with him, said, we're coming over, we're going to talk about Palmer amaranth and your role in that. And so when I got over, Mr. Herpendahl said, had this big grin on his face, and he said, I just have to tell you, my new employee out here is not familiar with ag terminology. And he came in to me and he said, we have folks from the Department of Agriculture and they're here to talk about some guy by the name of Palmer amaranth, which I thought, well, I guess we need to be a little more specific about it. And then I said, yeah, well, you think he's tough, you ought to meet his wife. He's tougher. So we had a good discussion about Palmer amaranth with USDA, and I'm sure you may have some questions about that as we move forward. We issue phytosanitary certifications for export to ensure that they're free of disease and free of pest. It's an important thing, and it continues to get more important all along as we look to that fourth leg of the stool that props up agriculture, and that's our export market. We license grain buyers and grain storage facilities in the state, making sure that their bonds are in place, making sure that there's protection for farmers in the event of a default at any of those facilities. Our lab service division, something I'm extremely proud of, our building, we co-locate with the Department of Health and also the Department of Human Rights, but we have a skywalk that connects us to a co-located ag laboratory. We co-locate and share that facility with the Department of Health. It is indeed a state-of-the-art facility. I would say one of the better facilities in the region at this point in time, and maybe much broader. The lab is really the foundation of our regulatory program. Without that, we would be farming out samples all across the state. This allows us to literally walk across the hall and have those samples analyzed. It supports the Minnesota Department of Ag's regulatory divisions and several divisions within the Department of Natural Resources. It examines samples of food, feed, dairy, fertilizer, pesticides, water, and water for a wide variety of tests. The Ag Marketing and Development Division, that division promotes local foods through our Minnesota Grown program, which has been part of our operation for many, many years. It provides technical assistance to organic farmers and livestock farmers. We assist Minnesota companies in marketing and exporting their ag products in domestic and international markets. We manage the Ag Growth Research and Innovation, or the AGRI grant program, which was created by this legislature in 2012, and many of you were here at the time that AGRI was created, and for that we have thousands of people that would be happy to stand up and thank you for that vision. It was created from the fiscal tails of the ethanol development program, a program I'm familiar with. It was $30 million initially, and the wisdom of the House Ag Committee said, look, those dollars were invested in rural Minnesota to build rural Minnesota. We want to maintain that money, and we'll continue to support programs across Minnesota that add value, that add programs or that deal with programs such as dairy investment, livestock investment grants, and we have done that over the past 5 years, coming up on 5 years. I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. So we support, certainly we support Minnesota's Ag in the Classroom program, which is the only program in the nation that is supported by and delivered through the Department of Agriculture. All the other Ag in the Classroom programs are supported by most cases of American Farm Bureau Federation in their state programs. This, I think, was a wise move back in the days when it was created. It's supported by the Department of Agriculture. That program has two full-time staff members, thanks to the legislature a few years back, that provided some resources to build that program out. So I appreciate that. I want to just highlight a few of the programs that I mentioned earlier. Our AGRI program, for one, in fiscal year 2014 through 16, the MDA has invested $30.7 million to help Minnesota agriculture producers and ag businesses remain technologically and economically competitive. And again, I mentioned earlier, the $30 million was part of the ethanol tails. When that support went away, you wisely chose to create AGRI and reinvest. The first year of that program, we lost $10 million because of budget balancing reasons. I'm hopeful that someday maybe we can get that $10 million back into the original corpus. But we're pleased with $20 million on a biannual basis to be able to support those programs. Of that $30 million, that we've spent in the past two years, 14, 15, and August 3 years, we will have spent $7.66 million in livestock investment grants, the largest investment we have of AGRI in livestock investment. We've spent or awarded $6.8 million in value-added grants. Example would be... what comes to mind? Redhead Creamery up in, I think, is it in your legislative district? That's in yours, Representative Anderson. We helped them build out their creamery, and so they are now adding value to dairy product, and they're selling some really, really good cheeses out of that facility. I think just a great example. Farm-to-school grant programs. Back in the days when I went to high school, we all had a Mrs. Comerford in the high school cafeteria who would slap your hand if you took two slices of bread, and don't have that much anymore. You have, in many cases, pre-processed and delivered to the school, and you just serve it. we're seeing that kind of roll back a little bit to an earlier time where there's an interest in preparing fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, fresh product. And so our focus is on providing additional opportunities to farmers, particularly those that grow fruits and vegetables. So they have found a new niche for their product, and we've found a great place to deliver increasingly healthy foods to young kids. So we've been able to assist them in purchasing, interestingly enough, one facility had no knives. Didn't have knives in there. I mean, who can think of a hot lunchroom that didn't have a knife? But they're out of knives. They don't have them. So we assisted them in buying cutlery for their program. We had a situation where the farmer with his tomatoes was facing a very narrow window, and so they had decided that they would like a juicer so that they could take the tomatoes because of the short season and extend that season by juicing the tomatoes and providing pasta and sauce or whatever they do with juiced tomatoes. I think a good opportunity, again, for farmers, those that choose to work in that arena, to have a chance to extend their growing season. Crop research grants, we've awarded $5.8 million of support for crop research grants across the state. So I'm really pleased with that. Another program that I am very proud of, and thanks to the support that you've given it, and that is the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. It basically is an outgrowth of concern that farmers had, and that in my recollection of the comments were something along the lines that every time you establish a rule or a law, and I adopt that rule or adopt that law, you move the goalposts. What we need, and if I've heard this term once, I've heard it 100 times, what we need is certainty. And so we took it all at face value and said, okay, let's see if we can't come up with something that establishes some certainty, at least for a 10-year period of time. The creation then was something called Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification. You get 10 years of certainty if you'll allow us to sit down with you and go over your operation and say, you know, we think that if you establish this BMP here, this BMP here, another one over here, another one down here, it looks like we can get to 8.5 or better on the tool that we use to overlay your farm. We can give you certainty. We'll put a sign at the end of your driveway that said, thank you very much, but I gave at the office, that says, I'm a proud member of the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. To date, having spent now just one full year from operating on a statewide perspective, we went targeted demonstration sites for the first year. To date, we have 307 farms that are now certified in Minnesota. Now, you will say, well, that's not a lot when you look at 73,400. That's true. But my sense of ag water quality is that you do that approach an acre at a time, a farm by a time, a watershed by a time. And if we establish BMPs on all working lands in Minnesota, wouldn't we have a better Minnesota, and wouldn't we have cleaner water? And I think the answer has to be yes. If we don't, then we're barking up the wrong tree with BMPs, and we should ask the University of Minnesota to change their approach. But I think those BMPs are correct, and I think if we establish those across the state, we'll be in a much better place than we are today. Let me just say, and then I'll take some questions on that, 307 farms, 200, and again, let me say, this is all voluntary. If you choose to support the program and be part of it, you can be part of it. If you don't, bless your heart, move forward with whatever you want to do. At present, we have about 200 to 250 farms that are in the queue waiting to be certified. We have presently 175,000 acres certified in Minnesota. And again, when you look at that from the perspective that we have nearly 25 million acres of farmland, that doesn't seem like a big number. But when you whittle that down to the most targeted areas of Minnesota, Central Sands, Carse, Southeast Minnesota, Southwest Minnesota, that number gets much smaller. And so I'm proud of the work that we've done. We've established more than 530 BMPs across that 175,000 acres, new BMPs, not old ones. And we have, in terms of the model that we utilize, and remember, all models are wrong, to quote Professor Box out of the University of Wisconsin, all models are wrong, however, some are useful. This is very useful. We have, at this point, retained on Minnesota fields annually 14.7 million pounds of soil. We have 9.7 million pounds of sediment and 6,086 pounds of phosphorus that are now being kept from entering our lakes, our rivers, and our streams on an annual basis based on the model that we use.
Let's stop for a second and take a couple of questions that Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple, actually. The one on your certification program now on the 10 years, I think that's fantastic. Does that carry over into other agencies as well? Once you've certified them, they get do they get stopped being bothered from DNR and MPCA as well?
Mr. Commissioner.
Well, let me, Representative Green, with the support of EPA, who came here to Minnesota, the administrator, and said on the tape and in print, we have no interest in managing water quality in the state. That's your responsibility. And I was really appreciative of the fact that she flew out here from Washington, D.C. just to say that. We also have the support of DNR. We also have the support of Bowser, and we have the support of MPCA. And so as it relates to water quality, I believe I can say, yes, we have their support. Whether, you know, I don't know, you'd have to define bother for me.
Follow-up, Representative Green?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess you can go out and talk to the farmers and they can describe the word bother for you. But the other question that I have, so I'm assuming that the answer to that is yes, that they will comply with the certification.
Yeah, they support the document, the tool that we use, and have endorsed it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, then the other question, we'll go back to the beginning. It's just a simple question. You've got forecasters of 7%. Total cash receipts are going to be down by 7%, but the cost is down 3% for implementation. What does the 3% relate to with the 7%? Because I know it's not going to bring that 7% down to 4, but is there a calculation as to what that 3% means to the bottom line?
We've pulled these numbers through USDA and have had a discussion face-to-face with him on these numbers, so I'll have to get back to you, Representative Green, on how that will all play out. The numbers that we utilize in this document are USDA numbers.
Thank you. Representative Verdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Commissioner, you mentioned that we have 25 million acres of ag land in the state.
I believe it's ballpark, 25 point something.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any figures on, let's say, the last 10, 20 years ago, what that figure would have been?
Commissioner?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I don't have them in front of me right now, but I've looked at maps from the 40s, as I know you have also, and my assumption is that the amount of tillable land in Minnesota had to have been significantly less because of happenings on the land over the last 50 years. 60 years.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for that. I mean, if you have any figures from, say, the last 10 years?
I'll get them.
I would be interested, for example, how the legacy amendment has affected that, if at all.
Yeah, I think FSA would have those figures as far as crop acres in Minnesota. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there you go. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the Commissioner. I've got three or four questions, and if that okay, Mr.
Chair? Go ahead.
I'm not asking for you to break these down and respond to the whole committee as a whole, but this is information I would like. Looking at your presentation, you have a $90 billion economic activity through ag, but through the crop and livestock, you have approximately $19 billion. So I'm kind of wondering where the other $70 billion is, and if you could get that to me, I would appreciate it. The more broken down you do, the better off, the happier this legislator will be. And it's always important to keep the legislator happy. Then the other is you claim 340,000 jobs in ag, and I'd like a little bit more breakdown on what that is.
Sure.
Urban versus, I don't want to use that word, urban breakdown to the rural breakdown, because I think that's part of a concern that I have is, is it the General Mills that have the 100,000 jobs, or is it, the Franklin family farm out in wherever? And then I guess this is I'm kind of surprised. I'd like a little bit more understanding of the agri-grants. So here's a series of questions for you. Is that $20 million a biennium?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, it is. It's $20 million biennially, about 10.3 per year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I may, Mr. Commissioner, do you understand that that's more than the Jobs and Economic Development Committee has for statewide economic development? Did you know that?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I did not know that, but I'm pleased to hear that the legislature stepped up to support rural Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr.
Mr. Commissioner, we break down that less than $20 million. We break that down about a 60-40 greater Minnesota versus urban Minnesota support. So then understand it's kind of a two bites at the apple. And my question, I know from the Jobs Committee, which I sit on and have for a long time, we ask for matching dollars for any kind of grant that goes out or clawbacks if they don't meet their expectations. So do you set expectations or clawbacks on the agri grants?
Commissioner.
Well, we have over 1,000 grants. We follow all of the grant procedures. We make sure that, we monitor that approach all the way through that grant process. I'm not answering you based on the wrinkle in your forehead.
Yeah, not at all. I'll rephrase the question.
Clawback. Define clawback.
In the economic development world, when a grant is typically given, there is a set of parameters that are set out. So if Fred's Food Processing out in wherever gets a grant for job training and expansion of their plant, they are required to come up with 5 jobs or 25 jobs. And if they don't, they have to give X percentage of the grant back. That would be a clawback if they don't meet set parameters of the grant. And so my question is, and when you say you meet all the parameters, who sets the parameters? Are you having the Ag Committee here set those parameters? Are you having your economic development people set those parameters? So that's really two questions. Who sets the parameters, and is there a clawback section or law involved in the agri grant?
Commissioner.
The grant is submitted to the department. We have a grants committee made up of staff and outside folks. We require a report before, during, and after the grant. We also require matching money. And so we're not in for all of it. We're in for a portion of it. And we require reports. And so if they fail to meet any of those requirements through the course of the grant, we'll claw back, absolutely.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. And that's actually kind of where I'm trying to get to. I'm kind of flabbergasted to start to realize that you have a more robust economic development program than our other committee does. I find that amazing. So if you could pass along to me or provide to me your grant process, and how that happens. I know over at DEED they have probably a couple 300,000 pages of requirements, so I'd like to have at least, maybe not 300,000 or maybe just electronically, what you consider your parameters for grants and how you go about picking the winners and the people who don't win. And then what's your criteria of clawback? Over in the Economic Development Department, or DEED, they have pretty stringent clawbacks and parameters for those clawbacks. I'd love to see those. And then what your matching grants consist of. Mm-hmm. So are you matching 5% or 25% or 100%? Mm-hmm. And if the other committee wants to share with
Chairman. I'll be happy to provide that. I don't have them all in front of me right now, but I'll be happy to provide any and all those answers to any and all those
questions. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'm kind of near and dear to some of these livestock investment grants, and as I recall, it's a 10% matching grant. The producer or farmer has to supply 90%, and the state grant is 10%, and it goes to upgrade facilities on livestock operations. More questions from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, I think you called me an old member. I think Chair Hamilton and I came in, he called us both old. I think we prefer vintage members.
You've got more breath.
Yes, more hair.
So, but I actually do have a question.
Go ahead.
Commissioner, you know what, you're talking about the things that the agency does, and, you know, my experience with agriculture out there now is that with low prices, we're still seeing high land values. And I know of auctions around my farm where land is still going very high. It's so like 7,800 an acre on thin soil. So without that correction, and that affects property taxes, that affects the inability of young farmers or new immigrant farmers to get land if they get outbid at an auction by somebody who's already got a lot of land. So how do we deal, I mean, the tools that the federal government used to have for price were reducing production, but then in the global economy, if we reduce production, other people start producing. So that tool's off the table. If we produce more, we're awash in the crop, and we have to try to find new uses. So on the larger picture, since the USDA secretary is now gone, I'm looking to you for a guidance here on this. How do we deal with these macroeconomic issues with, even if we're talking $20 million? How do we deal with this if your prices are low across the board, but you haven't had a correction in land value? And I don't see it coming.
Well, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, let me first of all say I'm not on the short list for Secretary of Agriculture, which may come as a huge surprise to you. So I really don't know. I do know a couple of folks on a very personal basis that probably will be on or are on the short list, and frankly, I hope they're appointed. We have four ways in which we can market product. We can market food, we can market fuel, we can market feed, and then we can market exports. Those are really the four pillars on which ag has stood for years. We continue to do what we can to figure out ways to add value, whether it's in the food, the feed, or the fuel. We've done a great job, I think, of doing it in the area of ethanol development. And there again, Representative, that was a focus on during a time when we had air quality problems in Minnesota. We were losing farms in Minnesota with low prices. There were four general areas that we needed fixing up. Jobs across Minnesota were important, and reducing our dependency on foreign oil. The legislature built an infrastructure and provided resources to build an industry. In 1987, we were burning 1 billion gallons of regular gasoline. That was it. Today, we can produce 1 billion gallons of ethanol. That's what that support did in terms of adding value to farm crops and doing something in Minnesota to help bolster farm income. Today, we basically do the same thing. We try to focus our energy and our resources on those four areas. That's about all we can do other than the state can write a check to every farmer across Minnesota. And I remember when that happened during the Nixon administration, where everyone got a check for $5,000. They called it the Flying Five back in the 70s. And it flew. It went right into cars and pickups and whatever else you had out there. So it happened. It worked very well. Obviously, we can't do it. We can't do that, but we can assist in developing markets, adding market opportunities for farmers, and that's been our focus. That also, Representative Mahoney, has been the focus of our agri program to help create new market opportunities for farmers. The economic development aspect of that whole approach is a side benefit. It's not our focus. Our focus is to develop and maintain new and emerging markets. And we've been able to do so with those 1,000 grants that we put on the table over the years.
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. I guess my question kind of follows up on that discussion. I have questions from constituents about what the future of the industrial hemp program might be, and wondering if there will be more opportunities for farmers to do that. And some farmers, I think, who ventured into that have found processing an issue. And I'm wondering about opportunities for promoting processing of industrial hemp. And then I have another follow-up after that.
Okay. Commissioner.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly, thanks for the question. And you know full well that we had an opportunity to move a pilot program forward last year. We had seven sites across Minnesota that had from a small amount of acreage up to, 20, I think, was the larger amount. I think you had an opportunity to hear from the Strofus family who did or did not, or will, or won't, will, okay. Some very successful grow-outs and some not so because they weren't able to get the seed at the right time. It's a process that we had to go through to make sure that DEA was supporting of us with this form called a 225 form. They still view it as a Class 1 narcotic. We don't seem to think so because THC is so low that you get a major headache from it, I guess. So we're hopeful that, when you think about it, soybeans was a new crop at one point in time, and so we're we would like to see new crops developed. Hopefully we can do that with cover crops that will allow for added value to a crop of soybeans. Maybe we can do it with industrial hemp. There are areas that products that we use every day that could be utilizing hemp as part of the ingredient. So I'm for that, Representative Bly, and I hope we continue to move ahead with those demonstration projects. What we have to focus on is how we can process it and how we can market that product, and that's going to be our challenge. So to develop it all together and build it out will be our challenge.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for mentioning other alternative crops. Forever Green is a bill that I've championed, and I'm looking forward to seeing that funded further as well. The other question I had has to do with good food, local foods kind of effort, and wondering about the discussion to expand that to other institutions, maybe prisons or maybe nursing homes. Or is that being talked about, or is that something that we could also look forward to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bly, I agree with you wholeheartedly that we need to be able to expand the opportunity for those farmers to provide food product for prisons, et cetera. The difficulty would be the providing of enough food and enough vegetable for that population. I know that they have a bid process that they have to go through. Fact of the matter is, I think a few years ago, the prisons were buying milk from Wisconsin to serve in the system, and I hope that – I don't have anything against Wisconsin, but I hope that got changed to take care of First District's supply at some point. So, but, yes, we continue to look for opportunities.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Johnson was on the list first. So Representative Johnson, my apologies.
we're used to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, of course, now we're sitting across from each other, so we're really confusing folks. But I just want to say my comment is that just on behalf of the family farmers of Minnesota, I think there's a lot of appreciation for what the department does, and the focus in marketing and expanding markets is a long-term trend and needed partly to keep more farmers on the land. And my first question relates to the concept of the farm-to-school program, but also I see it larger in some ways what Representative Bly is implying, or in general the farm-to-table movement that we see that consumers are driving. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing more small farmers an increase in the number of small farmers in Minnesota that are producing that sort of product?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I know you're, that's Representative Clark, you're Representative Johnson. Yeah.
I answered to Clark, too.
Yeah. First of all, let me say this. Thank you for the compliment. My dad would say that the pat on the back is only 3 foot away from a kick in the pants, and so thank you. Appreciate that. And, yes, I think we are seeing that. I can't give you the numbers. Paul Huguenin is here in the crowd, and if you're saying up the numbers of people that are enrolling in Minnesota Grown, I think expands year after year. And so the answer, I think, is simply yes, we are seeing an increase in that area of production. That's good news.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I expect that we'll see folks from the Department of Agriculture here again. I'd be interested in seeing those numbers because that's what I perceive happening. I'd also like to see some connection. We've done a lot of work with the food hubs, and the work with the food hubs, the food hub in my area does well because Gustavus Adolphus is a major buyer for that, and efforts to increase marketing to large institutions who can take on a lot of product. A second area I'm curious about on efforts to market perhaps as a niche product, products from Ag Water Certified Farms. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen some reference to that in the news. Can you give us any update, or should we wait for an update at another meeting about that? That seems to me to be of real interest and potential.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, that is a That's an individual decision. Obviously, the growers who are part of the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certified Program are encouraged to utilize. We think there's value in having that sign at the end of the driveway from a consumer perspective. I sense that people want to know more and more where the food is produced and how it's produced. And so I just think that if I were, providing food for retail, I would want to, milk that for all it's worth.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage the department to maybe give us some reports on that and see what I think is. I think when it's done by the individual farmer, it's almost impossible. I actually have a certified tree farm. I've sold timber. I don't see any benefit from it. And I'm curious about how we can do that, less for my needs to do that, but more for these farmers are doing something significant, in my opinion, and to advantage them in the marketplace somehow, there might be a way of a collective effort to help with that. And then the last thing is I like the work that the Department of Agriculture is doing in Forever Green and with the University of Minnesota, and I just want to encourage the department to continue to work with them and others to seek new markets for perennials. Mm-hmm. As we know, the perennials on the landscape can have a significant effect on improving water quality, especially with respect to nitrates. And I encourage you to continue and expand efforts to develop those sorts of markets as well. And thank you very much.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me apologize for coming in late in case I don't think this question got asked, but if it has, then just tell me right away. But I wanted to ask the Commissioner to talk a little bit more, talk about the issue of urban agriculture and some of the very small farms that are close to the urban area in terms of resources. And I know the department, you did a great job last year, maybe it was a year and a half now, of putting together a report on what could happen, what might need to happen. And both Chair Hamilton and Chair Anderson have been out to check out some of the urban agriculture, at least in Minneapolis and probably other times in other places too. But we don't have any resources going into that specifically right now, and I'm just wondering if you could talk about that, because I know you do care about it, and we've had some conversations that there may be some programs that could be possibly available, but I think we have to look at the issue of making sure that there's actually some targeted funding there, and if you could comment on that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, urban ag, I don't know whether I like the term or not, ag is ag, farming in urban areas. But I like the concept, food production in urban areas. It's a good idea. And we've done a significant amount of work in encouraging folks to take advantage of any program that we have available. Agri-funds are available to urban ag. We're happy to work with any and all folks that are interested in doing that. I know there's a couple of areas. You have a specific area in your district that you have a unique opportunity to develop out. It all takes money, as you know, and there is always a shortage of resources. There is a greenhouse at Metro State that actually has the name Department of Agriculture on it. I would love to see that greenhouse rehabbed and put to use again as a teaching tool, as a community-based resource, and a fruit production unit that could go directly into Metro State University, and they could build part of their curriculum around it. I know there are folks at the Metro State that are interested in developing an urban ag degree, if you will. I'm excited about that. I think it's a great opportunity, and again, it takes a significant amount of resources. I actually would love to see that greenhouse supported. They have a community buy-in. They have a Minsky buy-in. They're raising money to be able to help that. In the prior administration, the department apparently was requested to cut back. And so the greenhouse went by the wayside and was basically given to Metro State University. It's in horrible shape. I would be embarrassed to take you over there right now, but it can be salvaged. I know that as soon as you mention that, you're going to have several other folks that would like to look at that as an opportunity. Project Sweetie Pie is interested in a greenhouse that they could utilize in their overall programming. I know there's a greenhouse in Duluth that would like that. I'm there in spirit and body, but I'm just not there with the resources that it would take to do all of that. That's up to you.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that last comment. It is up to us, and I just wanted to make sure that we bring it to the table again here, so when this when the bill that some of us are working on to try to bring forward some specific resources, again, with both of your support, we'll get a good hearing, and we can talk about that.
Okay. Representative Mahoney again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You indicated that agri funds are available, but you didn't say whether they were granted. So I already put a few requests into you for information. Could you add to that a list of agri grants that have been made and the parameters around them and what they were? And I am interested, and I'll probably have follow-ups when you send me the first piece, of consistency on the grants. Economic development is about consistency. People want to know what they need to do to get help. And DEED has a full set of policies and procedures. I expect that you do, too, but I'd like to see them if I could.
Sure. Chair Hamilton's going to jump in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the Commissioner and Representative Mahoney, well, to everybody, we will be diving in deeper into the agriculture budget, and we'll take a look at each of these individual accounts. So you'll be getting a lot of your questions answered then as well. And so.
Representative?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have been here for 20 years, and people that witnesses or people that testify typically don't have the time to in-depth analyze a budget in front of us. It's really imperative upon us to analyze these budgets in our offices and read them and look them over. And if you can ask a question in committee, that's fine, but typically we have to bring people into our offices to really get in depth and go into it, because that's really part of our job. So I hope the commissioner did not take that as a that you can answer all the questions here. I prefer to get this stuff in my office and make a good cup of coffee and then see if I can not fall asleep reading numbers.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner.
Representative Mahoney, I hope I don't put you to sleep, but we'll be pleased to come over and sit down in your office and have a cup of coffee and go over the numbers with you.
Well, after you send me all that stuff and let me read it.
And Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you for the clarification as well, Representative Mahoney. My point is, of course, we can all ask for whatever information that we want. And rightfully so. My point is, we are going to be diving deeper into these budgets also, so maybe some of those questions will be answered.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, since you're not going to be the USDA Secretary, isn't there some awesome signing ceremony this afternoon that people could come to that really is kind of Minnesota unique and cool?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, indeed there is. There is a signing ceremony with USDA FSA announcing a partnership with new CREP resources, a voluntary program that folks can utilize for a variety of reasons as we move forward with water quality and conservation. And so that signing ceremony will take place at, I believe, 3 o'clock this afternoon. And so I would hope that those of you that have an interest in that would stop by. I'm not sure where. Is it in the Capitol Rotunda? Yeah, Capitol Rotunda.
Along those same lines, you mentioned Grant Herfindahl of the State FFA Director. He used to be the FSA director in my home county of Pope, and he held a press conference, I suppose, about a month ago now, and he had gotten authorization that Minnesota would have an additional 50,000 acres of CRP land. The program has been scaled back. I mean, nationally now we're down to 24 million acres, but he was able to get another, well, he and his staff, I assume, another 50,000 acres in Minnesota. And primarily, I think, for habitat purposes, acreages up to 40 acres would be looked at favorably in that program. So another good conservation program in Minnesota. Commissioner, I had a couple of questions myself to ask you. I assume we'll delve into this further as well. There are some bills pertaining to, you mentioned Mr. Amaranth, Palmer Amaranth. And the seed came into Minnesota, as I read, on some contaminated grass seed, CRP acreage, things like that. I assume your department has purview in the seed certification and purity work. Talk about that a little bit and what actually happened with that, the Palmer Amaranth coming into the state.
I sure will, Mr. Chairman. Let me just check the piece of paper here. Palmer Amaranth obviously is a fast-growing and competitive ag weed. We don't want it. We want to eradicate it, and that's the approach that we have taken today. It's also developed resistance to a significant number of herbicide classes and their modes of action. However, this particular variety has not. And so glyphosate would be effective and would probably be the preferred herbicide to utilize. What we're doing right now on the 14 sites in two counties, Lyon and Yellow Medicine County, is we're burning. And so we have flamethrowers who are out, identify the plant, and then burn it down and burn the surrounding area. The plant is capable of producing up to, I'm told, 250,000 seeds that can travel. Obviously, they fall, but they travel by wind. They could travel by birds. We're doing the best we can to isolate that site right now and burn it down. There are about 175 acres that have been impacted, and you're absolutely right, Chairman Anderson, this was a packet of seed that USDA apparently made available, and the source of that seed, again, it's an ongoing investigation at this point in time, so I'm telling you about all I know about it right now. They're trying to track the source down. There's been some indication that it may have been packaged in the state of Texas and found its way up into CRP acres. So we're on that. They're managing it and eradicating it. We're in the eradication mode right now. We cannot let that slip out our back door.
So, Commissioner, when that seed came to Minnesota, was it certified as pure and free of weed seeds such as this?
Let me read, how did this make it into our state? It should be noted that there is still an active investigation. I mentioned that. However, we can report that there was a single seed mix involved that was provided to meet the FSA NRCS Conservation Reserve Program called CP42 Pollinator Mix. It appears that one component of this mix came from a source in Texas, and this may be the source of Palmer Amaranth seed. It should also be noted that these CRP plantings have been successfully planted for over 40 years without a problem. Also noteworthy is CRP land plantings are distinctly different from the Minnesota buffer strips. The MDA has identified these 13 land owners and sites using this mixture on approximately 175 acres in two counties. So is it certified? I don't know. If there is a certification process at some other point before it comes in, I don't know.
Okay. We may be getting...
But again, it is a continuing investigation. We hopefully will have some answers before that year.
Okay.
Mr. Priesto is here from the department who heads plant protection. Gear.
Members, Mr. Chair, my name is Gear Friesen. I'm the director of Plant Protection Division. And just to get into the technicalities of the statute, last year the seed statute was amended to allow the commissioner to designate seed as being prohibited. So once a seed is prohibited, there's a zero tolerance for seed in the mixes. That designation was made in the fall of last year by the commissioner, so that created that zero tolerance. Prior to that point, you could have up to 1% seed or weed contamination in a seed mix. So you could have other amaranth species in there, and telling the different amaranth species apart is very difficult. So there was that seed could have come in, and as long as it was less than 1% of amaranth or a weed seed in there, it was legal up until the point the commissioner designated it as being prohibited. And after that point, there's a zero tolerance. So that's what we're focusing on now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions of Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe on this point, we did have a law that was passed in, I think, 7, 8, or 9. Maybe Mr. Sullivan has the memory on that, but that required local ecotype for seed, which would have prevented the Texas seed mix from being used if that law had still been in place. But it was repealed in 2011.
Question from Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. We'll go back to the beginning again. You said that we have $90 billion in economic activity. Where does that rank in the overall GDP in Minnesota? What percentage would that be?
Commissioner? I don't have the exact, Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I don't know the ranking of that $90 billion, but we are in the top 10 in just about every area. So my guessing it would be there, but I'll get that number for you.
Representative?
And I appreciate that, and I'll look for that, but just for a rough guess, is it 25%, 30%?
I don't dare.
Commissioner?
Okay. All right, okay. Thank you.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Green, Commissioner. I did some quick rough estimates, and I got about 27% of our state's GDP.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
That was what I was going to guess also.
I was going to say 26, but well.
You might want to double-check my math. But
yeah. Commissioner, you mentioned that the number of farms in the state today is compared to 1958. Has the definition of a farm changed, or is it still the same, and what is the definition of a farm today?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe the definition is if you market $1,000 or more worth of ag product, you're called a farm.
Okay.
Now, of that 73,400, my guess is that 80%, probably 20% produce 80% of the food that we grow here in Minnesota. I think that's pretty standard across the country.
Okay. Further questions?
I have a question.
Representative, I can't say Mary, but Kunish Podin?
Podin,
okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I have a question. What is your relationship with the USDA Rural Development? Do you work hand in hand? Or are you kind of in your own silos? How does that work?
Well, Commissioner. Madam Chair, Representative, I'm from Minnesota, and we connect our silos with skywalks, like downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so we try to work with them and have for the past the years that I've been here. Certainly, we try to partner with them every chance we can in terms of rural development opportunities. So we have a good partnership with USDA FSA. We have a good partnership with USDA Rural Development. I think the CREP program is a good example, particularly with FSA. I believe FSA and us have partnered very nicely from a resource perspective on Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification. We've also benefited from their partnership in terms of ethanol development. A piece of legislation Representative Anderson has been perennially after, and But as far as USDA and rural development, I know the state director very well, and I can pick up the phone and call her at any time and work with her if that's a possibility, and I know that that will be the case with the incoming directors.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yep. So with the new administration that will be coming in, what do you anticipate will be some of the changes or some of the things that what is your feeling on new administration? I know there'll be a new director for rural development, and are there things that you're looking for some changes in?
Obviously you're asking the $64 million question. I don't know what's going to take place there. Unfortunately, it will probably be down the road a ways before those appointments are made. We don't know who the new Secretary of Agriculture will be at this point in time and what priorities he or she will bring to the table. We don't know who the deputy, who the undersecretaries of farm programs and foreign ag service will be, or the undersecretary for rural development. They all have their say and their place in this process. So, and I suspect that it won't be status quo. I suspect it will be something different. But as long as we keep the focus from an FSA perspective on being partners with farmers, that's a good thing. And as long as USDA Rural Development keeps their focus on assisting communities of 2,000 and less across the state, that's a good thing also.
Okay. More questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, I liked your comment about one ag, about we're all in this together. I want to thank Representative Clark for really opening up my eyes to agriculture when we talk about urban ag. That tour through South Minneapolis and others was very beneficial to me. And Commissioner, in your duties as a commissioner, we have the agriculture diversification, that role that you play addressing that, and non-agriculture, promoting non-agricultural type activities as well. So what I'd like to do is sit down with the department and revisit the wording around the agri funds and to address some of these topics as well, because I think there's more that we can do, reaching out to not only geographical locations but also different ethnicities. We had some hearings last year where I turned to the crowd and said, never have we seen so much color in this room, and it's beautiful. And there's a tremendous amount of interest out there. So I'd like to visit on that a little more. My question is, we had a strong focus the last legislative session on food safety. We invested in the VDL, the Wilmer Poultry Testing Lab, additional inspectors, et cetera. I know that you had lab equipment in the bonding bill, which did not pass, and so we have Chair Erdahl in here, so we can update him on that. But also, do we have adequate equipment? You talk about imports and exports. Are we adequately staffed, and do we have the adequate equipment at those locations so that we can keep up with the demands there?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chair Hamilton, Gary Horvath is here in the room, and if you would like, I certainly would invite him down to give you a straight-up answer to that. As to my sense is that we can always use more, but Gary?
When he's coming down, Commissioner, could you introduce the rest of your staff here? We have a few minutes. Good contingent and good folks.
Yeah, of course. I know them like I know the back of my hand. But if I asked you, Mr. Chairman, to identify everyone around this room without those signs, you would come up short, maybe. Yeah. So I'm going to ask Andrea Vobel is the assistant commissioner. Identify yourself, please, because I'm choking here. Yeah, please. Yeah.
Management Division, the Food and Feed Division, and the
I've been with the department
2 months.
Welcome.
I'm Ben Miller. I'm the division director of our food safety division.
Pat Wallman. I serve as deputy commissioner. I've been at the department since he's been in the food administration.
Steve
Ernest. I'm the agency chief financial officer.
Cool.
I'm Paul Kippen, I'm a section supervisor in the Ag Marketing and Development.
Josh Stamper, I'm the new division director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
I'm Dan Stoddard, I'm assistant director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
Ladies.
I'm Nicole Mazur, I'm the director of the Inspection Division.
And you're director of the Inspection
Division. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Gary Horvath. I'm the director of the Lab Services Division. And as the commissioner said, we had $2.218 million in the bonding bill. Capital equipment, $2.218, I believe. And capital equipment for the lab of our nature is very costly. It's a challenge for us. We often have to set aside operational dollars, which we would prefer to go, you know, to increase staffing for capability, but we always have to worry about equipment failing, and so capital equipment in the lab is a challenge we have. If I understood your question, I thought you were talking about some other equipment outside of the lab. Is that correct?
Chair Hamilton?
That is correct. If we need any additional equipment, whether it's at to monitor imports and exports, to make sure that we are meeting all our requirements. Do we need any equipment in any other areas outside of this laboratory?
Yeah, I can't speak to those directly, but yes, we have facilities in East Grand Forks and other places where we're facing similar issues of aging equipment and we can't replace them with operational dollars.
Follow up, Chair?
Yes. So if you could discuss that internally and get back to us on that. Like I said, we made substantial investments the last biennium to make sure that we are make sure that we have adequate equipment all across the state and resources. So if you could dive into that and let us know, it'd be greatly appreciated.
But we'll do that, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, we forgot the most important key person here, and that's Whitney Place. Whitney?
Hi, I'm Whitney Place. I'm the Director of Government Relations.
But doesn't mean to diminish the rest of your importance.
Any other follow-up questions? Representative Clark.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just thinking as we were talking about bonding, and when the commissioner ran down the four different areas where in Urban Ag from Duluth, St. Paul, Minneapolis, two different places, maybe those should be things we looked at in the bonding bill. I hadn't really thought of that, Representative Ergal, but maybe we could have a conversation between the chairman and you and I and just see if those might be a place where that would be more appropriate rather than an appropriation.
We're glad you're in this committee, Representative Ergal.
Sure.
And Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looks like they're preoccupied up front, but I'll, Mr. Commissioner, there is no money for Emerald Ash Borer in the agency budget, correct, right now? There's no money available right now. No federal money, no nothing, right?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. Representative Hansen, that's correct. Our federal dollars have literally dried up. And the reason is initially they supported Emerald Ash Borer and the routes that Emerald Ash Borer may take to get in. So it was a spread. And our statutory responsibility is to try to control that and eradicate it. The same with APHIS. Their job is to do the same. When that didn't happen, then they step back and throw the responsibility to the U.S. Forest Service. And when that happened, then the $40 million went very quickly down to about $7 million, if not $4 million. The same situation applies to us. We operate under that same model, and we're, you know, continuing to try to manage the spread, slow the spread, and our numbers are, you know, they're strong in that regard. We are actually doing, I think, a service, and we're saving money that we would not be able to save had we just walked away from that and just let it hit all at once. So that's an issue we deal with on a week-by-week basis. We're quarantining an area in northeastern Minnesota right now that we're in discussion with the tribes on. So, again, an area that probably for some new members, they have no idea that our responsibility is there. Once EAB and other pests have gone beyond the control and into the managing, then it will be flipped over to DNR. In this case, they will manage it under their forest management practices. Right now, it continues to be our responsibility.
Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe there's a lot of folks who weren't here in 09, but Representative Green, we actually provided $2 million of outdoor heritage funds, not for buying land, but for going to the Department of Ag to give to local units of government to do the initial response for Emerald Ash Borer. And we didn't follow up on that on a bipartisan basis. And so that precedent is there, but right now we have zero. And local governments, whether they're rural, suburban, or urban, are going to be dealing with taking some trees down more and more and more.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Henson, I fully expect that they will be at the table requesting assistance. I know that the Shade Tree Advisory Committee has one recommendation, and local units of government have another. Shade Tree Advisory would like to look at treatment. They would like to look at replacement. Removal and replacement. The municipalities are looking more at removal and replacement. However, the treatment in many cases actually utilizes the very product that everyone has a problem with, and that's the whole issue of neonics. So damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess. Mr. Chairman, I wasn't able to quite finish up my before I knew this would happen. We'd get going on it, but I just wanted to mention the issue of Rural Finance Authority, an area that we are heavily involved in. We partner with local lenders to provide affordable low-interest loans to farmers. We offer loans to younger and beginning farmers to purchase land. We finance farm improvements such as grain handling facilities, machine storage, and manure systems. We help farmers reorganize their debt to improve their cash flow, and we finance improvements for modernization of livestock operations. We are out of money. We're out of money as of December, the end of December of this past year. I want to give a shout-out to Representative Tim Miller, who is authoring the bill to separate that ask and move it forward on its own for, I believe, $35 million. That's critically important because we will be turning down applications for those very specific areas at a very interesting time as we move into the spring of this year. So my thanks to you, Representative Miller. I wouldn't expect anything less from my neighbor in County Ohio County. So excellent. And I encourage that piece of legislation to move forward as quickly as possible so that we can assist in getting resources in the hands of those applicants.
And there will be a hearing on that. It's an important piece. Thanks to the representative for carrying that bill. That will be coming up next week, Monday, Tuesday, I believe. Final question, Representative Johnson? No?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask for an expedited hearing on that. And
yeah.
Sounds like you're doing it. Good work.
Yep. Well, thanks to Mr. Knisley here. If I could just one quick last request, I think some changes in federal food safety law. Now our wine and beer and things are classified as food, and that affects some of the wineries in the state. Could you give us a report sometime of how many wineries we have in the state and how they're doing and how they're handling some of those food safety issues. Okay?
Absolutely.
Very good. If no more questions from the committee, good hearing today, and our meeting is adjourned.